Welcome to the Laughing Place podcast. Tonight, your friends and hosts, Daniel and Jonathan, use their vivid imagination to create magical discussions for all to enjoy. Nothing is more wonderful than our podcast. Well, except a lot of other things. Hi, I'm Jonathan.
And I'm Daniel. Welcome to the Ninth Laughing Place podcast.
Today we're talking about pyrotechnics, featuring the top 10 firework moments, tips on how to see firework displays within the Disney theme parks, trivia, armchair imagineering discussion about Fantasmic ideas for Fantasmic 2.0, which has been rumored, and much more.
So let's start off with the news.
Hoi Poi Loi at Downtown Disney at the Disneyland Resort is now closed. At Disney's California Adventure, the Drawn to the Magic show will now be featured at the Hollywood Backlot stage and includes a character meet and greet set immediately following each show. Brazilian Adriano Bastos led start to finish Sunday en route to his third victory in the 13th annual Walt Disney World Marathon. Bastos, 27, of Sao Paulo, posted a time of 2 hours 19 minutes and 44 seconds to lead the field of more than 10,000 participants in the full marathon. Nearly 3,000 runners participated in the Goofy's Race and a Half Challenge, running the half marathon on Saturday and marathon on Sunday. The trailer for The Wild has debuted on Disney.com. The film opens April 14th.
And any resemblance to Madagascar is purely coincidental.
Michael D. Eisner, former chairman and chief executive officer for the Walt Disney Company, has joined CNBC, the world leader in business news, as the host of a new bi-monthly primetime interview program, Conversations with Michael Eisner.
It reminds me of those old Disney Channel specials, Conversation with Bob Hope and Betty White. I wonder if they'll use the MGM soundstage. No, I don't think they will at CNBC.
We crack jokes and have laugh tracks and such. And
it'll be interesting to see. I mean, based on what I remember from the wonderful world of Disney, I never really thought of Michael Eisner as a dynamic television personality. But who knows? We'll see what happens.
Today's trivia question: who supplies the voice for the opening narration for Illuminations: Reflections of Earth? The answer is coming up.
Now it's time for Armchair Imagineering, where we put on our sorcerer hats and come up with interesting ideas for Disney destinations around the world. Today's topic is Fantasmic 2.0. Now, this is something that's been rumored for some time, which is basically an update for Fantasmic at either Disneyland or Walt Disney World. I believe that I've heard a lot more rumors pointing to Disneyland's Fantasmic getting a renovation, but since the show is similar, we're going to be discussing both versions. Indigo on the Laughing Place discussion boards posted some ideas for the Disney MGM Studios version. He wrote, "The first thing that needs to be done is to fix the giant eyesore that is the mountain set. As crowds sit and wait for the show to begin, they're stuck just looking at this ugly brown piece of rock. That needs to be a set piece that magically transforms into a wondrous setting. For instance, it could start as the castle from Sleeping Beauty. As the show begins, Mickey Mouse could prick his finger and fall asleep. Then his dreams would take over. Every movie ends up with more vines crawling over the castle until it is covered in them. At the end, Mickey defeats Maleficent and frees the castle and all the prince and princesses from inside." I think that that ugly brown piece of rock, as he puts it, is a pretty fair description. It's pretty ugly.
Well, also, the same would apply for California, too, where you just kind of look at the shack on the island for a little while. But maybe an idea they could do is sort of set it up where it would be sort of, you know, just a simple backdrop where they could just, you know, lift up the curtain, as it were, and have, you know, just a, you know, a sheet, just grim backdrop for everything. It would sort of add a little bit, not too much, but it would just add that much more to it, I think.
I think the problem, though, is that unlike Disneyland's, where it is a shack that's not particularly interesting to look at, it does fit in with the theming of Frontierland in the daytime, whereas the Fantasmic stage at Disney MGM Studios really stands out as completely manufactured. The difference that I find between the Disney MGM Studios version and Disneyland is that at Disneyland, the island that you walked on the daytime magically transforms into the stage at night. Whereas at MGM Studios, because it looks so manufactured, you don't feel like there was any magic to it. You feel like they could have easily built all of that into the set because it doesn't look like anything but a set.
Even just for what they have now, they could always just even have people, even, you know how they do the flower petals, how they sort of look like a big flower? Well, they could almost do that with just, you know, walking scenery people and just kind of walk around and add props over the place. Like, for the jungle scene, they have all the animals, but yet there's, like, no trees or anything. They're just all these African animals and the very strange rock thing. So, I mean, if you just even did that, that could also enhance it.
I don't think it's as much of a problem during the show as it is before the show, and you're looking at this backdrop. I think that a really good idea to do would be just recently at Disneyland at the It's a Small World. They've started doing really amazing projections on that building and using the building where it still keeps the shapes of the building because the way they project it, it almost looks like they're painting over the building with images. And I think that if they made some sort of flat type backdrop for Fantasmic that was even just abstract in design, but could really easily transform from scene to scene with the use of image projections and whatnot, I think that would be really stunning, and I think that would be a good way of doing it. Much better than just the random mountain.
I wonder why they exactly went with the mountain in the first place, because it doesn't exactly seem to fit with anything they have in the show. I mean, sort of like the Pocahontas, I guess, but even then you think more, you know, foresty or something.
Yeah, and speaking of Pocahontas, obviously that's not that well of a received section of the Disney MGM Studios version. And even speaking for the Disneyland version, they're, you know, it's lasted a while. I could see how they might update it. Can you think of particular scenes or characters that you think would work in Fantasmic that isn't currently in either show?
Well, it just all depends on whether or not if you'd want to go more modern characters with Fantasmic or not, because I could sort of see, you know, the Jungle Book turning into, like, a Lilo and Stitch thing, but it just all depends on what sort of mood you're trying to set. Because Lilo and Stitch does not really have any similarities to Jungle Book besides, you know, it's just, you know, the tropical location. So, I mean, it's a completely different attitude. So it just depends on, do you want a mysterious show? Do you want, you know, let's have a party with fireworks show? It just all depends on what you want.
It's an interesting point because I think that the Disneyland version, more so than a Disney World version, manages to pull together cohesively. I think that the segments chosen, they blend together. Pocahontas really kind of stands out when you watch the Disney MGM Studios version as not really fitting in with the rest of it. And I was thinking about ideas, and it is kind of tough to think of, because you're dealing with such different movies, to think of a concept that blends them all together, because essentially Fantasm is kind of a highlight reel almost of Disney moments. If they're looking at segments to change, my personal one that I would really think that could be changed is the underwater segment with Monstro at the Disneyland version. I think that segment of the show is a little, I know that it doesn't have as much going on the island because they have to the negotiations with the Pinocchio and then the pirate ship coming around the corner. So it's kind of like a set change, but I just think that segment could be a little more interesting. And then the Chernabog segment later on almost feels a little redundant as well. I think it also serves the same purpose as like a set change.
But it's got nothing on the Florida bubble scene. Now that is pretty ridiculous time wise. I really want to know what that was all about in their, Well, another question to ask is that with this new Fantasmic, would they want to even amp it up to the next level by even doing stuff not just on the island, but elsewhere within the land? Like, for instance, for in New Orleans Square at California, I could almost see a Pirates of the Caribbean movie segment where there's pirates like on top of the buildings or something, and sort of incorporating that within that the show is almost all around you. Of course, that could be a complete crowd control issue depending on how you do it and all. So, I mean, not sure the plausibility, but I think that could be interesting to see pulled off.
I think that they could easily do fireworks coming from the other direction. Well, not easily. I think that it's feasible for them to do, like, fireworks. Especially, I know there's a rumor that they're redoing the Riverbell Terrace, and so they could incorporate firework launchers into that location to launch back into the island and kind of have a war. That could be interesting. And then I'm sure at Florida, there would be ways to incorporate the audience. Like, I mean, the Jungle Book scene could have people coming down and, like, wireworks and doing all kinds of crazy things. It's interesting that they didn't think more outside the box with the Florida version, considering they did build everything from scratch. And I think that using the audience would be a good idea in terms of making it more immersive. Because I guess another problem with Florida's version is that it's not quite as immersive because you feel more distant from the stage, and I think doing something like that would help. I think a Pirates of the Caribbean segment would be a very good replacement for the Pocahontas segment. Well, that concludes our armchair discussion for this week. Next week, we're going to be discussing Tarzan Rocks, which soon will be closing at Disney's Animal Kingdom, and a concept for a show to replace that. So if you have any suggestions, you can call us toll-free at 1-866-327-5072. If you're under 18 years of age, please make sure you have your parents' or guardian's permission before calling.
This week in Disney history... January 15th is the 31st anniversary of the opening of Space Mountain at the Magic Kingdom. January 17th is the 3rd anniversary of the debut of Aladdin, a musical spectacular at Disney's California Adventure. And January 19th is the 57th anniversary of the release of So Dear to My Heart.
Recently, Window to the Magic released a new DVD, Holiday Time at Disneyland, which is an unofficial fan-made video of different footage, including coverage of the Haunted Mansion holiday, It's a Small World holiday, and the Christmas parade at Disneyland. Personally, I found the DVD to be really high quality and almost professional at times, especially the Haunted Mansion holiday segment I found very cinematically edited. It was very fun to watch. I think that a big improvement over what you would come up with your home video camera. Especially there was one part where he does the Madame Leota scene, and he actually rode the attraction enough times to get pretty much all of Madame Leota's projections for all the dialogue, which I can only imagine how many times he must have gone on the attraction to get that footage. So it's a very impressive edit, and I feel that it's a really good souvenir of the attraction.
The Christmas parade footage I was impressed by. It was nice.
The It's a Small World footage is also very good, incorporating some multi-passes through the attraction to edit into a nice cohesive whole. And it gives you a very good overview of the attraction. And then finally, he actually includes some coverage of just the decorations around the resort, which also is very good and actually gave me the first look I had of the new It's a Small World video projections that they've begun to do at Disneyland, which I thought was just amazing, and I can't wait to get out there to see them in use with the fireworks display as well.
And I really want to know how he got the overhead shots while on the rides. I thought that was pretty neat, how on It's a Small World, he actually had the camera above everybody's heads a couple of times. I thought that was pretty neat. The same thing goes for Haunted Mansion. You can see a higher view than you would normally see just by riding the attraction.
All in all, I very much recommend the DVD, and it is currently available at the Laughing Place store. And now it's time for Tour Tips, where we give advice from the seasoned Disney destination visitor.
We taste like paprika.
Today we're going to be talking about explosions and how to see them as well as possible. First of all, let's start over in Florida with wishes. Obviously, the most popular place to watch this is in front of the castle, and it is a good place. However, it is also the place that is the most busy. So if you would like to find one that's a little less crowded, you can always go to Fantasyland, where you actually end up getting surrounded by the fireworks, because there are castle launchers as well as fireworks that launch from behind Fantasyland, so that's a cool spot. But if you do want the ultimate view, I would say the best spot is probably on the bridge towards Tomorrowland, about underneath the Tomorrowland sign. A good thing about this view is not only is it a great view of the fireworks, but you have Tinkerbell fly right over your head, which is fun. Illumination's Reflections of Earth is visible all around World Showcase Lagoon, and it'll run just about every night, even when it's lightning, pretty much. I've seen it in some pretty insane weather. And actually, a good place to see it if it's raining is over in Japan. If you go to the second story of the Mitsukoshi store, they have the teppanyaki and the lounge. There is a little covered patio area where you can see the fireworks. You do have the Torii Gate in your way that is in the lagoon, but it is a great place to watch it from a covered setting, so that way you don't get completely drenched. Of course, you really should just buy a poncho.
And also, if you're looking for a place to sit down and relax and watch Illuminations, you could always arrive early, because it tends to fill up at the last minutes, but arrive early at the Mexico Cantina outdoor restaurant, where you can sit down at a bench right on the water's edge. It's a very clear view, not to mention that there's umbrellas above, so just in case there's weather problems, you could stay pretty much dry.
If you're going to be visiting the resort around holiday times when they're doing special displays like New Year's Eve or 4th of July, Magic Kingdom usually does the show the night before as well, July 3rd and December 30th. So you actually can see at least two of the theme park's displays, and actually for July 4th you can see all three. You have to see the Magic Kingdom on July 3rd, but then Disney MGM Studios firework display is about an hour before Epcot, so you can go from MGM Studios, walk through the International Gateway, and see Epcot's. I did that last year, and it worked out really well. At Disneyland, the new Remember Dreams Come True show very much capitalizes on the hub area near the partner statue, so that obviously is the busiest place to watch, and I've heard reports of people waiting a couple of hours at least to get a good spot there. But I do know that also by It's a Small World, they're using projections on the It's a Small World facade, which is very impressive, and some people actually think that it's a comparable show, even though you don't get all of the castle effects. Also, if you do what I do and generally watch the second Fantasmic and show up right when the first one's leaving, you can see it from the Fantasmic area. Again, you won't see all the effects, but I have found that the sound in the Frontierland New Orleans Square area is a lot better. I think it's the only place where you can watch the fireworks with true stereo sound. So as you can see, there are lots of ways to enjoy Disney's firework displays.
The trivia question was, who supplies the voice for the opening narration for Illuminations Reflections of Earth? The answer is Jim Cummings, Winnie the Pooh, and all that sort of fun stuff. Today's top 10 list is about fireworks. No, not the real fireworks, but fictionalized fireworks, like from the movies. Number 10, It's a Small World Holiday.
The fireworks in the Asian section really remind me a lot of the electrical parade, which also appears on this list. But I have to say the little strobes when you go underneath the tunnel with the firework sounds, it's cool. It's a cute little effect.
Number 9, A Bug's Life.
I have to say that I never thought that corn and pea pods and whatever, the seeds, it makes a rather interesting fireworks display. Probably the best daytime fireworks I've ever seen.
It's grain. Number 8, Mulan.
Explosions with fireworks. You know when they were doing a Chinese movie that the villain was going to die through fireworks. It was just a given.
Number 7, the Muppet Vision 3D firework display.
Oh,
Enjoying the fireworks?
No, you're sitting on my foot. Okay, so we're not exactly Statler and Waldorf, but we try.
We need to work on our comedic timing a little bit, but It's interesting the variations between both versions of the Florida version and the California version, how the fireworks look different.
Breathtaking, if you ask me.
Number 6, Disney's Electrical Parade.
The patriotic finale featuring the world's longest bacon strip.
Number 5, Soarin'. Or Soarin' Over California.
Explosions with hidden Mickeys. Very pretty.
See, unlike Muppet Vision, the differences are there's no differences to comparison to both versions. I'm sorry.
Except in the pre-show, Patrick Warburton says, "Hello and welcome to Soarin'."
Number 4, the Toontown Firework Factory.
I love watching the kids like keep moving up and down the, what is that called? Detonator, I guess. And waiting for it to explode. It's a really cool effect, like, especially at night with all the lighting they do on the smoke.
I rarely ever get it to do the explosion. I always get, like, that, wah, or whatever I do when I push it down.
It doesn't like you.
I'm too wimpy. Number 3, the Rescuers.
Snoop's fireworks are pretty exciting, especially when they, like, launch it all over the boat and... And then Orville almost, like, crashes through the fireworks. Lots of firework action going on in that movie, especially for a movie that takes place in the swamp.
And number 2, Mary Poppins.
I'm not exactly sure why Admiral Boom goes insane with the fireworks, but it does make for great cinematography. The blending of animation with the live action is a lot of fun to watch.
So be sure, if you're ever in a situation with runaway fireworks, that you take a chimney sweep brush and you just whack them away. It works like a charm. Number 1, what you've been waiting for the last 9 entries. It's coming up in 2 seconds. El Rio del Tiempo.
Fiber optic fireworks. It's actually a really cool effect. Possibly the only cool effect on that attraction. I mean, I like it and all, but honestly, effects-wise, it's not exactly one to write home about. It's cute and it's entertaining, but the fiber optics, they're cool. I'd love to have that on my ceiling. Well, that concludes another episode of the Laughing Place podcast. Before we leave, we do have a comment about last week's show from Cream Cheese Alchemist on the boards, and he said, "Any reason why David Xanatos from Gargoyles didn't make the top 10 list, which was the richest Disney characters? Anyone who can afford to buy a Scottish castle from the Dark Ages, get it dismantled, shipped piece by piece, and reassembled atop a New York City skyscraper in the 1990s has to be extraordinarily loaded." I think we stand corrected, and he probably should have been on the list. And if you ever notice anything we've left off the list, or have any comments to mention, or even want to submit an idea for the Armchair Imagineering segment, you can call us toll-free at 1-866-327-5072. Remember, if you're under 18 years of age, please make sure you have your parents or guardian's permission before calling. You can also email us at podcast@laughingplace.com or just post in the discussion boards in the podcast section. And now, Jonathan, with the last words.
Where there's a will, there's a Jack Sparrow.
Goodbye.
See ya.